It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azure Talon? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
I survived! Who knew?
Well, I'm relieved, for sure.
Yeah, it was a rough few seconds.
Yeah, I was kind of, it's kind of like, so, you know, when the astronauts are on the wrong side of the moon and you can't, there's no radio contact. It was like that.
So Ezzy was in a big hunger strike for surprisingly too long. And what that means is she gets real squirrely and she's like attached to me all the time. Mm-hmm. She lives on this couch with me and all the time. And she's very just desperate for attention, very squirrely. And then finally she broke down and ate something. The very next day, I didn't see her for most of the day. She was just in the bedroom on the pillow that has a heating pad in it, just hanging out. And that is basically where she has been all the time in the few days since the hunger strike has broken. But apparently, she cannot resist being on podcasts. Because as soon as I sat down to record, she fucking showed up. I don't understand it. So let me ask you something.
Okay.
As a wealthy white American, which we are, we have to come to terms with this, people. The wealth gap in American society and Western society as a whole, and arguably global society, is getting bigger. There are not a lot of people in the middle anymore. You're either on the poor end or on the wealthy end. And I'm not saying you and I are particularly wealthy, but I think in that diagram, we are on the wealthy. I don't think we're poor people.
Well, and we're doing reasonably well in one income household. So that puts us pretty far ahead of a lot of people.
So, and this is how things are trending. This is what we call late stage capitalism. The rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. And I have witnessed something that I'm reading a lot into. And I don't know if that's fair or not. I have noticed multiple banks having advertisements, which, by the way, right there, the fact that banks advertise doesn't. I'm not comfortable about that, but whatever. What's in your wallet? I've noticed multiple banks are advertising new features that basically are, when you're overdrawn on your account, we'll let it slide for a little while. We will give you extra days to fix that, or we won't charge you as long as you're overdrawn by less than this amount or whatever.
Like the hat offers that service.
The hat offered it last week.
We learned last week.
Yes. And on the surface, this is good. This is great.
Sure.
Why would you want that? No. I mean, and it's always been crazy. Like if you are somebody who really the checking account is like times when I'm like, oh, so I was $3 overdrawn. And now you're charging me $35. But it's also essentially a way to make it more comfortable to live with less and to give you a little more flexibility to live outside your means. And I don't like that sentence because it implies a personal responsibility thing. But what I mean is, it's sort of like, yeah, we've pretty much stacked the deck so you have almost no money. One way we're going to distract you from it is to hand wave this thing that would be a very strong reminder that you have no money. Because we're not worried. We'll get you eventually. We don't have to be quick about it. We basically already own it. And it reminds me a little bit of the big credit push in the 80s and the 90s and things like that. This idea of like, you can do whatever you want, just put it on credit. To me, this is a version of that. This is, yeah, you can spend more than you've got in there. It's fine. You know, just pay it back. Looking up very close to, and we're getting a lot of these. Some banking apps nowadays have this whole, the paycheck advance thing. That's a thing with some of these banking apps now. They're like, you can get your money up to, as long as you're doing direct deposit with your paycheck, so we know what's coming in, you can get access to that money up to a week before it actually gets deposited. And these all sound useful and relatively selfless, but I'm like, to me, it sounds like we're encouraging you to live outside your means and to spend more money that you don't have and to be less worried about keeping track of your money will take care of you. And it has a very company store vibe to me.
Company store, huh?
I always thought the company store was a great illustration for something that happens in so many aspects of our modern financial culture. This idea of, we will compensate you, and then we will also provide a service, and that service will cost so much more than your compensation. But as we are the only game in town, this is the only way to do it, and you get into a cycle of debt. Am I talking out of my ass? Am I...
No, this is all very interesting.
You've got what I call William Inscrutable Face on, where I'm like, I can't tell if he agrees with me or disagrees with me, or he's holding in a fart. I'm not sure.
It's not a matter of agreeing or disagreeing. It's a matter of...
It is holding in a fart. Okay, sorry. If you want to mute yourself long enough for that, because there won't be a visual cue, I assume. If there is, holy crap, get to the doctor.
I'm just thinking about it.
Oh, that's never good. Wait, about your fart?
Mm-mm.
What were we talking about?
What were we talking about?
Yeah.
What were you talking about? You were talking what? About banks.
Farts? Oh, yeah.
Having certain policies that seem to be acclimating people to, or seem to be offsetting the normal indicators of a person's lack of wealth. So that maybe they wouldn't, you know, so much think about that.
That's got nothing to do with farts. I don't even know why you brought that up. Did you have a good idea? There was just a bright light over your head, so I thought maybe you suddenly had a good idea.
And then you brought up the whole company store context. That was interesting. I'd never really, you know, made that connection before. That's kind of interesting. I don't know.
Are you doing a commentary track for the episode we're recording right now?
I'm just thinking about what you're saying.
I know, but that would fit under it real well. Like, we'll play it back and I'll do all that. And Liam's like, yeah, and then he brought up this company store thing, and that was really interesting. Fun fact, this part took 7 takes because Tony could not hold his shit together. This was the best one. It feels very insidious to me, and I come from that unique position of both privilege and ignorance that I'm like, this could be absolutely nothing.
So, like, what's your take then on the, you know, subprime mortgages and things like that? I mean, do you think that was a similar kind of thing where...
I do. Yeah. Okay. Very much. And again, like I said, the in general, the push for credit is tricky. And it still exists now. We had friends who bought a new house. And I'm like, do they make a lot more money than us? No, they don't. They were just really willing to extend their mortgage real far out there.
Okay. But I mean, like, in all these examples, I think I think you're onto something in terms of what the effect of it is. I mean, I think what's motivating people to do it is they think they're going to make more money. I mean, the subprime mortgage thing was, I think they knew that they were creating a hot potato that somebody would end up holding when it blew up. But if it wasn't them, they'd still make money. And that is what happened. Everybody who was involved with that wasn't harmed by it at all, unless they happened to be holding a hot potato when it blew up. And I think some of these other things you're talking about might be like that, where there's a risk to these financial institutions, but they're not, it's not because they're being altruistic or they're trying to help their customers or looking out for the little guy or anything like that. They think that somehow it's, they will make money on it. And if there's a loss anywhere to be had in what they're doing, it won't happen to them. It'll happen to somebody else.
It's essentially a meaningless assurance. It's not meaningless. I understand. If I go $5 overdrawn, and in the past I would get charged $35 for that, and now I won't be. That's not meaningless. That's $35.
Well, and it's the difference between someone being able to pay their rent. I mean, it's a pretty big deal.
But in general, saying, you know what? Don't worry so much if you get overdrawn is meaningless, because if you get overdrawn long enough or dollar enough, they're gonna worry about
it. Oh, yeah, right.
And there's not gonna be a point where they're like, oh, you're super overdrawn. Oops, guess that's our fault.
Well, another thing is, all of these things, it's kind of like, we won't charge you a fee if you have checking here. Well, they shouldn't be charging you a fee anyway. You're giving them your money to put in their bank and to use as a checking account. So a lot of the things they're giving you a break on, they shouldn't have been doing in the first place. So it's not like, you know, it's kind of like furniture stores when they have a big sale that's 50% off. Well, they already marked it up 200%, so you're not getting a deal. And so there's a little bit of that. But I think you're right. I think there is the, even though I don't suppose there's anyone thinking, oh, I know how we'll stick it to these low class people. We'll make them forget they're low class. I think it does kind of have that effect. I think that's an added sort of benefit. It's like, oh, the masses can be lulled into this false sense of opulence.
It feels very insidious. I'm certainly not suggesting, you know what? They should crack down on overdraft.
No, I know. But I think, you know, I think in terms, if you're looking at it through the lens of class conflict and whatever, it definitely is a thing that the people who are providing this service are not, they're not actually risking anything or even doing anything, but they're definitely making the people think they're doing something. And also, I agree, I think they're also making those people feel a little not as far down on the class structure as they actually are.
And it encourages spending, because essentially what you're saying is, don't worry about the cost.
Yeah,
we'll settle up later.
Right. But I mean, just like with the housing crisis, they knew some of those people would have hardship, that they'd fail, that maybe bad things would even happen in their life. Didn't care.
If they weren't
the ones holding the hot potato when it blew, they would make money, which did happen. I mean, very few people who were in the upper echelons, you know, were harmed by that. And they knew that. And everybody involved knew that. Everybody knew that the risk to them was this specific risk. And they didn't care about the risk to the people downstream, because who cares if they walk away from their house, or if it's foreclosed, or they're homeless, or if a divorce results, or whatever. Nobody cared. Or someone's 401k is trashed right before they were ready to retire. Don't care. I mean, and you know, surely some of them were smart enough to think things like that might happen. Didn't care. So yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think there is, even though, you know, I know I've been in situations where I would have been glad if I ran into an overdraft, because it's happened to me in my life. I admit that I wouldn't have gotten charged, you know, $50 for a $3 or $5 overdraft. I know people who are still in that situation, who are going to take advantage, you know, are going to take advantage of those banks, hoping that they're And I want that to happen. But is there an insidious side that you're talking about? Yeah, I think you might have a point there.
I'm not opposed to the policy. I'm opposed to bragging about the policy. Not only because I'm like, I don't think that's something you should brag about, but I think it does. It's I guess it's a version of Amazon and Subaru and everybody once a year or so telling me how much they donated to charity. I'm like, I don't want you to stop donating to charity, but it's not, I have a general sense of how much your company is worth. And I also understand how charitable write-offs work. It's not that impressive. And also what you're doing is an advertisement that you're saying, look, we're good people.
Yeah,
and here's the proof.
Yeah.
And what these are commercials are doing is saying, look, your financial stuff is going to be fine. Don't overthink it. Spend what you want. It's fine. And here's the proof. And I'm like, no, that's not what that means.
Well, to the credit of some institutions, usually not the largest ones. I mean, usually these are like local co-ops that do this. I mean, there are often programs offered by institutions to try to help people manage their money better and to actually not to understand what their means are and to live within them. You know, that does happen, but you're correct. A lot of the larger institutions, you know, they don't really have any incentive to do those things outside of the kindness of their own hearts, which doesn't seem to play into it much. And so, you're right. When these companies do things, first and foremost, they think they're going to make money, obviously, but also, you know, there usually is some kind of sort of dark side. Well, and like you gave a good example too, that the big credit push, you know, college kids were given credit cards and stuff and sent, you know, no risk or low interest cards. I mean, that happened to me. I mean, I graduated from high school in 87, and for years I got nothing but credit card offers. I could have taken, and sometimes they sent me the card itself and said, here, you can use this right now.
I remember that.
And I could have, and a lot of my friends did, and they got in huge debt. I didn't do that, but I saw a lot of my friends do that, get in enormous trouble. And that's the dark side of that. On one hand, you think, oh, these people are getting a head start. They're building their credit. Well, sure, if they take these cards and use them responsibly, but you know a certain percentage won't. They know a certain percentage won't. Yeah.
It's not even just finances. My parents used to talk about in the 60s on college campuses, there were just free cigarettes. Like literally, they were these little weird packs of four, and they were just in baskets in the student union, and you could just go grab them.
Wow.
Because they already knew, even though the public didn't necessarily have it together yet, Surgeon General hadn't done the thing yet, they already knew once they've started, they will pay the money for it.
Yeah.
And college kids don't have money, but after college, they get money and they'll buy cigarettes.
It's gross.
It's a personal failing on my part, because here's the deal. Hy-Vee, my local supermarket, has an armed guard now.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
A while back, after the 800th shooting of the particular year in question, I think it might have been 2019, I don't know, Hy-Vee decided, we're going to have armed guard at our stores because terrorism? I don't know. And I had a friend who was like, fuck that, I'm boycotting Hy-Vee. I'm not doing that. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I don't think this is happening. Like, they're talking a big game now, but I'm not going to start boycotting on the rumor. If it ever happens, yeah, I'll have to find a new place to shop. But let's ease up a little bit. A lot of people like to, it's the same way Don't tell me about bills that were introduced to Congress. I don't give a shit. Tell me about the ones that got passed by both houses and are expected to be signed. Those are the ones I care about. Anyway. So I tell this story often because I love showing how much smarter I am than my friends. And I tell it and somebody's like, oh yeah, no, that happened. And I'm like, what? I haven't seen it. They're like, yeah, he's there. He doesn't do anything. Frequently just sort of stands in a corner. It's a ridiculous thing, but he's there. He's got a gun. And I was like, is it only certain hours? Maybe it's not when I go. I don't know. But I talked to enough people to confirm that it was real. And just the other day, I finally saw myself. And guess what? I'm still shopping at Hy-Vee.
Okay.
And there's a lot of things like this. And there's a lot of things that I like to feel like I have principles on it. And sometimes I do. Sometimes I do. But there's a lot of things that I'm like, I'm not okay with that. I need to make a stand. And I don't, because it's just easier and more comfortable. And so when I see the world doing this, where we're just going to have people living in abject poverty and people who are super, super rich, and I appear to be riding the coattails of the super, super rich ones, I'm like, somebody needs to stop this, because I know I'm not going to. I do not want to find myself as one of the fucking capital city people in the Hunger Games, because by the time I have reached that point, I am definitely going to be unwilling to give up my comfort and privilege for the disenfranchised. And at this point, I still feel like I'm in a range where it's not as bad and I can still do things. But someday I'm going to find myself literally being one of the dystopian baddies. And at that point, I think I'm just going to feel sad and go back to my lovely luxury penthouse and cry into my diamond encrusted handkerchiefs.
You mean, like, what a lot of rich white liberals do right now? I mean, that,
exactly.
That seems to be the pattern. Yeah,
exactly. And it's getting worse. It's making me feel uncomfortable. So somebody fix it. I'm here for it. I am willing to pay more at restaurants so we can pay them a fair wage. I am willing to pay much more in taxes so that we can actually get some decent housing initiatives and things like this. I am absolutely willing to do this. Here's what I am not willing to do. If you don't change this and you keep being shitty to your restaurant workers and pay them less and make it worse for them, I'm still gonna order your food. Unless there is another restaurant that pays a fair wage for more money and makes a Monte Cristo sandwich as good as the one you make. So help me out here. I'm willing to do the right thing, even if it costs me, as long as it doesn't really cost me.
Well, isn't that the problem, is figuring out what the right thing is? I mean, you say you're willing to pay more money at the restaurant and you're willing to pay more taxes, but maybe neither of those things are really the direction where the solution is.
I'm willing to acknowledge that possibility. What I decry in the strongest terms possible is that the possibility that those aren't the solution have anything to do with why those things aren't happening.
Oh, well, that's true, probably.
Yeah. I'm like, how about we try both of them? If we try both of them and it doesn't work, then we can be like, okay, that was clearly not the answer.
Or we can try.
Let's try them first.
Let's try something.
I mean, yeah, we got a long list.
No, you're right. There's a lot of things that we're not even trying.
Let's try something that's not trickle-down economics, privatization of all utilities,
sure, and I mean,
tax cuts for the hyper-rich.
I'm not sure I necessarily count those things as trying anything, because those things don't.
We keep doing them, so I guess they're not trying in that we've clearly perfected that.
I follow what you're saying, yeah, but yeah, there really does seem to be a lack of political will. There's a lot of incentives to not fix these things because they're being used as political footballs in elections, where, like, you know, even the people who claim they want to fix them would not benefit if they were fixed, because then they can't use them, you know, to criticize their opponents, and they can blame them for it. So,
and I'm not willing to give up all of my privilege to make things good and equitable for everyone. I am, however, willing to give up some of my privilege to make things better for people. So that's what I want, folks, because the worse the problem gets, the more it's going to require drastic intervention in which I am just unable and unwilling to participate. So somebody get this fucking ball rolling so I can still be involved before it hurts too much. That's all I'm asking.
Well, I hope everyone hears your impassioned cry.
Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that wants to do good, genuinely, sincerely, desperately, but let's not go crazy. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 606.
I mean, do you understand how many months out of the year I get affordable and quite tasty fresh blueberries?
12.
I wouldn't go that far. There's a few months where they're A, not that good, and B, quite expensive.
Okay.
But like 8.
That's good. That's a lot of months.
And that's insane. And that's terrible for a lot of reasons. I also fucking love blueberries. So I'm like, please, somebody fucking make it so I can only get the blueberries for 3 or 4 months at most. And help somebody with the extra blueberries. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm so comfortable, and I'm not comfortable being this comfortable, but I know that I'm not willing to get rid of all of my comfort. I need, you know, it's a standard white liberal guilt thing. I need to suffer just enough that I feel like it's doing good, but not so much that it hampers me.
But you're actually saying is,
I am not suffering enough at this point. Not even close. I am too. There was a lady in front of me at the pharmacy today, and she did the same thing I did. She showed up saying, "Hi, I'd like to get a COVID booster," and they're like, "Good luck. You can't do it this way. You have to go to the website and you have to make an appointment." And I had the same thing happen to me, and they're like, "Get the fuck out." And so I got the fuck out. I went on the website. I made an appointment for the next day, and I went back at the same time the next day. This woman was unhappy and causes a but they said, I heard that you could just come up. And to be fair, she didn't blame the people there or anything like that. But just like that vibe of like, I'm clearly pissed off. And so even if it's not at you, it's still uncomfortable for them. And I was just standing behind her being like, oh, geez, lady, just chill, relax. There's blueberries. What more do you need? So I was very smug of how much I'm willing to put up with already. And that's, my life is so easy. And that, and that makes it hard on me. So I'm saying I want my life to be slightly harder in the name of social justice, but only slightly. So if somebody could work on that. Off the top of my head, I'm going to say
Jazz and Megan and maybe Beth. Definitely not Azurtown. And Stu's got three kids, so I don't think he's got time to make the world a better place. Who else? But yeah, mostly Jazz and Megan. I'm putting a lot of eggs in your baskets. Go fix some shit for me. Make things a little harder on me in the name of good. This came up recently because we're in Oregon right now.
Yep, you are.
I know it doesn't look like it, but and we were talking about packing, and I was like, I might need to pack a pair of jeans just in case, because we're going to be out in the wilderness a little bit. We're renting a cabin in the gorge, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, I'm going to have to take my heavy boots, because it's Oregon, and it's October, and it's the woods. Like, the odds of it being muddy and stuff, are, I can't walk around in my little sandal things all the time. But then I thought about it, I'm like, I'm not sure I need the jeans. I'm trying to think of a circumstance where that's going to matter. Like, I don't think it is. It's not a cold thing. I have answers for that. Like, I don't think it is. And then Trish pointed out, she's like, the area where we're renting the place is kind of a conservative environment, because Oregon, like many states, but more so than most, is a couple of very left-wing cities surrounded by an incredibly red state. And she told me this, she's like, so, you know, I don't know if it'll be weird you wearing a caftan or whatever. And I was like, it probably won't, but also it would be awesome if it was. Because this is what I'm looking for. Easy sense of persecution. I'm a white dude. This is what we want. We want to feel like we're suffering. We want to feel like we don't just have all the privilege. So it's like, people made fun of me for wearing a dress. So, you know, the struggle is real. So this is what I'm looking for, people. Help me struggle. And for a good reason, not for no reason. Don't just come over and, like, steal my shit. Like, I mean, unless you're going to give it to someone who needs it. But, like, don't come over and be like, punch me in the face and then be like, yeah, no, see, now you're struggling. I'm like, yeah, but who did it help? Probably hurt your knuckles. So yeah, somebody make that happen for me. You're gonna miss me this week, aren't you? You're gonna be super sad.
I'll probably be too busy to worry about it.
No. I think it's gonna actually fuck up your schoolwork. Thinking about how I'm not in Iowa. I'm not even sure that's about me. I think thinking about people not being in Iowa probably makes you sad. Oh my God, I didn't tell you last week. You said words that made me forget the words I was going to say.
That happens.
Yes. When you were talking about going to Dyersville.
Yep.
We went to Solon. See? Small world. Huh? No, it is not. Trish and I went to Solon for dinner last week.
Oh.
As we were coming out of the restaurant, it was the time of year and the time of day where it was sort of getting sunsetty, but also it had evil clouds. Like, you know, you live in this part of the country. It had that stuff where you're like, storm's coming, if not a straight up tornado. Like, shit's not right. The air feels heavy. The clouds are making funny shapes and laughing at me. And, like, and you get the most amazing colors filtered through all the things and whatever. And a couple of, like, two or three guys, I would say maybe 30s ish, came out before us. And one of them was like, whoa, look at that. It's like, yeah. And then one of them was like, is this heaven? And everybody laughed. And then eventually, like, one of them was like, no, it's Solon. And we walked on because our paths went different ways. And in the process, I leaned to Trish and I was like, did you just have the urge to say, no, it's Iowa? And she's like, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely did. And I mean, don't get me wrong. He knew what he was saying. People don't just say, is this heaven?
No. That's right.
Like, despite what Kevin Costner would have you believe. Was that ever a tourism thing for Iowa? Because damn well should have been.
It was. Okay, still good. Is. You can get bumper stickers or t-shirts or whatever.
Whatever. Track suits with it written on the butt. Yep. Things like that. All yep. right.
Whatever you want.
If you're just joining us, listen to last week. That'll explain everything. So, did you see any movies this week?
No.
You know, like A Ghost Waits or Lucky?
No. In honor of our spooktacular, this is our spooktacular.
Oh, yeah.
Happy Halloween, everybody, in a few days. So we've been watching A Haunting. You know that? Are you familiar with that show, A Haunting? It's got several seasons by, I think, the Destination, something, some travel channel has it. Have you heard of it?
I think so. It's reality, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck that. It's stupid. Hate it.
Oh, before I talk about that, though, I just want to say you guys are up in Solon. The leaves have been fantastic. I don't know by the time this airs what, I mean, if we're going to be way past
the leaves, will even still exist.
But this fall, the leaves have been so beautiful all over the place. And I've been happy to be able, because usually when October rolls around, I don't usually go home, actually. I don't go down to the farm in October usually, or I don't often take a trip up to northeastern Iowa that's renowned for its beautiful foliage up there, because that's the driftless area. Well, whatever. But I've, you know, circumstances allowed me to travel to various places in Iowa this October, and it's just beautiful everywhere. It's just gorgeous. So did you guys enjoy the foliage when you went up to Solon?
We did. I'm very excited for going to Oregon, because it's also pretty big there, especially where we'll be. This is the time of year for it.
Right.
But yeah, my favorite is trees that can't agree. Like in Solon, there was a tree that was still bright green leaves, except one limb that was deep red. I always think that's really cool, because I'm like, how do it know?
Yeah, yeah. How's that? What's going on there?
I shouldn't. It probably is a sign that there's something deeply unhealthy about that tree. But I always think that's cool. Or the sort of variegated ones. So like the outside leaves are yellow, and then in a little bit is orange, and then like the ones in the center are like, that always is really cool to me.
Yeah. But yeah, so we've been watching A Haunting, and it's,
bro, did you breathe on my arm? Bro, you have to tell me. Bro, no, I was back here.
It's not ghost hunters, it's people talking about their haunting. And then there are dramatizations of, well, you know,
which involved dude's game, bro.
But there is a narrative that starts to emerge.
Oh,
and I find that very interesting. Yeah. So the person, okay. So first the person moves in to a house. Usually it's usually about a house.
Yeah.
So the person moves into a house.
Are there episodes about a parking lot? So I parked here one day, and then over time I noticed.
I think there have been episodes about like restaurants and things.
Yeah.
Or hotels, but it's usually
places that people go and hang out inside.
Sure. And there are times where the episode is sort of about a house, but then they realize, oh, that it's not the house that's haunted, it's the piece of land that's haunted, or
oh,
or an object. Sometimes that happens. All right, so first you move into a house. Then if there's any witchcraft or Ouija board stuff, you address that. There might not be any of that, though.
How often is there? I know that like in every goddamn movie, they find a Ouija board in the attic.
A lot.
So, okay. So then this posits two scenarios. Well, three, one being that they're just fucking lying. But the other two scenarios.
Okay.
One is that there's just a lot of hedge witches out there and psychics just living out in the world, or somehow they have a propensity to have to sell their houses, which interesting. And all of these people are real lackadaisical about taking their shit with them. Or what I hope is the possibility is that it's somebody like me who just doesn't fucking believe. But when I know I'm going to move, you better believe I'm buying the oldest, shittiest looking Ouija board on eBay and sticking it in the attic just before we leave, just as a treat for the next owners.
It's not always in them, but it's very frequently in them.
That's so weird.
One of the more recent ones.
If your house doesn't have that, you don't go on a haunting.
Yeah. One of the more recent ones we saw was the land was haunted, and it was gypsies. That's what they said. Some gypsies were on that property 200 years ago, and they did some ritual, and it haunted. It created a portal. Portals have been mentioned many times.
It's not dead Romani ghosts. They passed through and they were like, hey, Satan, you like this vacant lot? And Satan was like, yeah. And they're like, cool, we're out.
The story they told was that there was some crime committed against them or something.
And
they were trying
vengeance.
Well, actually, they didn't even say that. They said they were trying to dispel some kind of evil or something. And instead, they made a portal and invited it in. I don't know. I don't know what the deal was.
Oops.
Yeah, oops. There, Indian burial grounds have been mentioned more than once in this series as well. Okay, so you move into a house. Maybe there's Ouija board stuff. Maybe there's witchcraft. Then people start hearing things, which almost are always just normal house sounds. I mean, there's no way they were that bothered by these things when they first happened. They sort of maybe retroactively decided, well, that must have been a ghost when I heard that. So that happens. Then maybe not, someone will get scratched or some kind of thing will happen that really alarms the people beyond just noises. But not always. Sometimes they're only alarmed by the noises and they feel really threatened and they have to move out because these noises are so scary. That happens more often than you'd think. Mm-hmm. But once in a while, someone seems to get hurt or they see an apparition and it freaks them out. Then they call a paranormal society.
Yeah.
Almost every single show this happens.
I mean, that's what I would do. I mean, I don't believe in a lick of any of this, but if I turn around and all the dining tables were stacked up, like all the chairs, that seems to be a real common one.
Oh,
all
the chairs.
If that shit happened, I would call some paranormal society people.
I forgot. And sometimes what does it is something like that. Like not, it's never as dramatic as all the chairs being stacked, but something gets moved and it's not supposed to.
It's never something that couldn't be disproved.
Or something flies across the room, or they take some photos and there's orbs.
Oh, goddamn orbs.
Whatever. But I forgot to mention a thing. Usually before they call the paranormal person, it's a woman or a child who is experiencing these things and the dad doesn't believe it for a long time. And then he becomes convinced. But also a disproportionate amount of time, the father has a job that has him away a lot. Like he's not there for months at a time kind of thing. Like he's a trucker or he, whatever. This happens a disproportionate amount of time. So once the dad gets convinced, all of these people, including the paranormal investigators, are way, way, way disproportionately white.
I might be psychic because on your first way, I knew that was going to end with the word white.
Yeah, but
this is, let's be honest, in general, investigating the paranormal is some white people bullshit.
But experiencing it too, though. Experiencing it also.
Well, yeah, they're tied together.
But also, all the couples are heterosexual couples. And not just that, but almost
gay people can't be haunted.
Almost every time, not only are they heterosexual, but there's actually like the woman or man will say something to the effect of, well, she's girly and I'm the protector. I mean, like, not just heterosexual, like it's the 50s like or the 60s or
gender
something.
Gender roles.
Oh, yeah. It's crazy.
Now, are we dealing with law of big numbers here, though? I mean, is this just because arguably the... I don't know. There's so many creeping variables in this, and I love it.
I realize that, but it's just
I will never watch this show, but I love it.
It would be one thing for them to be all just straight couples, but there's almost always some occasion for them to say something really sexist about, well, I'm the protector, or she'll say, well, he's the protector and he's really manly, or he'll say, well, she's really girly, and also when the guy doesn't believe it. There's clearly an element of patronizing and stuff there.
Oh, yeah.
And the woman's complaining about that. So anyway, so finally they call a paranormal group, which there must be 10 in every state or something, because every single show has them, every single show.
The last LARP I was ever involved with got dissolved, and the main core people of it decided to become a paranormal society instead.
All right. So they show up with their equipment.
I know that said more about me than them.
99% of the time they find nothing with their equipment. Nothing. The other 1% of the time they claim to find something, but it's EVP and orbs, which we both know is also nothing. So all of this stuff with all the equipment and whatever they bring, that never amounts to anything. The thing that happened that the paranormal people bring that actually sort of advances the plot every single time, no matter what they find or not find, is the psychic. If they bring a psychic along, the psychic tells them everything they want to hear and then suggests, well, you need to cleanse the house. Okay. But like I said, 99% of the time, they don't even pretend that the other people have anything to say besides the psychic. The other 1%, it's still just the psychic. So then they do a cleansing of the house. And there's tons of ways to do this, I guess. Mostly it's Catholic. Mostly. It doesn't matter if you're Catholic. It doesn't matter if the team is Catholic.
No.
You're going to call a priest.
Bell, book, candle.
Yeah. The Catholics are going to come do it, but not always.
I'm partial to the sage stick myself.
Well, many times they all bring a sage stick, all of them, even if there's a priest there doing his thing. Someone's got a sage stick and a feather, and they're doing this whole thing.
Oh, of course. Of course.
And you sometimes know, you'll
that generic cleansing ritual that's not tied to any particular culture.
No, although
just we all don't know.
The narrator will mention it's a Native American thing and that this is what they're doing. So sometimes the show will make it look like the cleansing was really challenging and the whole house shook and things were flying across the room.
You know, like Star Trek.
But sometimes the person will like, say a prayer and then it's over and it's like, well, gosh, what's wrong with all those other people? Why can't their cleansing be as one prayer and one and done as this person? But sometimes, usually, actually, probably most of the time, maybe 50-60% of the time, we haven't even started act three at this point, because what's going to happen is the cleansing just made the spirit mad and it's going to come back even stronger. And then they have to either hire someone else to do a different cleansing, or they have the same person come back and try harder or something. I don't know. Yeah. Clench a little harder when you're doing the ritual. And then eventually
the Spirit of Christ requests of you. No, wait, that's not strong.
Then eventually the house is cleansed, or a person is exorcised, or this happens the least amount of time, but it does happen. Nothing works and the family has to leave.
They move out. Yeah.
So, but I mean, now everything I just said, isn't that most movies about this type of thing? Doesn't it really follow the same formula?
Yes. Except, here's the deal. There's a lot of deals here.
It just seems remarkably first consistent of all, from episode to episode.
First of all, there's a lot of exploitation going on here, which I'm not happy about. And you are complicit in it by watching these TV shows. A lot of people convincing them that their fears are well-founded. And if you'll just pay me money, or attention or spectacle. No, and to be fair, there's also some mutual exploitation. I think some people, in the same way that, I don't know if people remember, but Jerry Springer and Maury Povich and all those shows, and you're like, where do they find these crazy people? I know, personally, a lot of those crazy people sit down with their friends and loved ones and make up a crazy-ass story and call them so they can get on TV. And so I think there's some like, oh, it's haunted. Oh, we'll make a TV show out of it. It's great. So there is some of both. But those shows, most of the time, end with, well, this certainly was a real and serious thing that we did here, and none of us should be embarrassed, and we all arguably should be admired. But now it's fine, and we can go about our lives as normal, but with the knowledge that we had a TV show and probably got paid for this. And I fucking hate that.
Well,
whereas the movies end with, oh shit, this is real. Oh my God, we're going to hell forever. Ah! And I love that. My favorite one is, we are a ghost hunter TV show and we have a new kid. And the new kid is a big believer. And then we do a thing and the new kid sees that we kind of fake some of our stuff. And we have to take the new kid aside and say, listen, for TV purposes, sometimes it has to be. We don't ever outright lie. Or in some versions they do. But we don't, but we maximize the thing so that it draws people attention and can be a successful thing. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they go to a place and there's fucking actual ghosts and it eats them all at the end. And I love it.
Well, a lot of these, I mean, some of them, like I said, someone is sure they were scratched or pushed or something.
Yeah.
I can imagine feeling a sense of danger if that happens to you or whatever, but a lot of them, nothing like that happens. I mean, they just are freaked out by noises or maybe an apparition or whatever, and they feel really threatened. And sometimes as a person who's a therapist in training, I'm pretty sure there's mental illness involved.
Oh my God, I just realized how much you're going to refer to yourself like that over the next couple of years.
It's just
what this I is going to be like when people are like, as a vegan.
No, I'm just saying you learn things about different types of symptoms that people have when they're suffering, maybe the early stages of mental illness. And it's like, well, that's what that sounds like. But of course, demonic possession is one of those things. And they do talk about that in this show. And so you're like, oh man, they really should, someone should.
Well, and
a psychiatrist should see this
person. Guess what? I've been possessed.
You have.
Not even a joke. In college.
Okay.
A friend got a group of us together. And we were sort of a paranormal society, but our specific goal, what we were operating under the school of thought that there actually has been some research in, but it's all kind of pseudosciencey, but essentially supernatural things can be created via power of force of will. If a group of people believe hard enough that there's a ghost, it can manifest a ghost.
Okay.
And a friend of ours wanted to do this. And there's like, in the science building, there's this room. It's nice and private. We can go there like once a week and we'll hang out there. And we were like reading from scary books and stuff and talking about things or whatever. And over time, maybe we will get this into something.
Because you'll increase your level of belief? Is that?
Yeah. This will increase the psychic vibrations or whatever. Oh, okay. You know, gotcha. We'll manifest a poltergeist, for lack of a better term. And so we did it.
And you thought this was a good idea?
Yeah.
But I mean,
cool.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Nowadays I know it's the dumbest thing for a variety of reasons. It's dumb if you don't believe in it, and it's real dumb if you do believe it.
That's what I'm getting at.
At the time, I was a college student and
okay.
not an atheist yet, and thought it sounded awesome. And at one point, we decided, let's do some spirit board shit. I believe we specifically didn't do a Ouija board because one person there was like, I don't fuck with that. It wasn't a superstition thing. They're very opposed to Hasbro. No, I'm kidding. It was a superstition. But so what we did instead was we just made pieces of paper with letters on them and put them around the table. And then we had just a plastic drinking cup and we moved around.
And that didn't freak them out?
No, apparently not. Because we didn't have to pay Hasbro anything. While we were doing this, I felt weird. And more specifically, somebody else pointed out that I looked weird. And I think that reinforced it. And I genuinely believed I had been essentially taken over by another entity who was a small girl by the name of Emily. And I talked to them for a while as Emily. I remember all of this. I remember the feeling at the time, and it wasn't a complete loss of control. I think it was very similar when people talk about being successfully hypnotized. You sort of can't be hypnotized if you don't want to be hypnotized. And so I think I was leaning into the whole process. But I very much believed something was going on, and they believed something was going on. And I 100% know nothing was going on.
How do you know nothing was going on?
Because I remember back then, and I'm just like, yeah, no, that was just me making shit up.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I'll put it this way. I know nothing was going on to the same level of knowledge that I know that I am not currently possessed by an outside spirit. I guess technically I don't.
But it's as like. Yeah, I understand.
Because I'm just thinking back, and I'm like, no, I got into that headspace. And I believed it, and I wanted to believe it. And I mean, we didn't exactly learn like interesting facets of Emily's life or anything like that. Which, again, even we were under the impression that we had created her, so there wouldn't necessarily be any. But and it only happened the one time.
It seems odd to me that I've never heard this story before. Like, it seems actually, like this is the kind of story that would have come up on the podcast at least.
It does. It does. And I'm not actually willing to guarantee that I didn't tell the story years ago and we both forgotten.
Maybe we forgot.
Here's what I will say about that, because I'm revisiting. And I do tell the story sometimes. It didn't have a real big impact on me.
Oh, right. Sure.
And that's the thing. It sounds like it should have. It sounds like, but like, even amongst my college stories, it's way down there.
Hmm.
I mean, don't get me wrong. A lot of the other ones are terrible, but it just didn't. We did it for maybe a couple months and then schedules didn't match up and we just stopped. I remember almost all the people. I think there were five people and I can't remember one of them. So that one is probably the ghost. But I remember my friend Jeremiah, who I still know to this day on Twitter. And my friend Kate. I don't know what's going on. I think we're Facebook friends. And my friend Roy, who is dead now.
That's too bad.
Probably not because of him. And yeah, I think there was another person, but I don't remember who it was. But yeah, it is weird that I haven't told it before, but it just isn't. That, but we were talking about this, and I'm like, oh, yeah, I've been possessed. Yeah. Because I have.
Well,
but I like to think, and this might be too much hubris. I like to think, I believe, with nothing to back it hasn't been tested, but I believe I am now at the point where if I saw an apparition, if something flew across the room, if I got scratched by an unknown thing, whatever, I would not think it's supernatural. I would either think it's something I invented in my head, or if there is concrete proof, I would think, okay, what are the possible reasons here? I think I would probably not, I would be more inclined to think my brain's doing something dumb than there's a ghost here.
Yeah, I mean, that's where I've been my whole life, really, with that kind of thing.
But again, hasn't been tested. So it's entirely possible that depending on the quality of the apparition in question, I might be like, oh shit, there's ghosts now. Like, like, well, I don't want to claim that I know that for certain, but and there's definitely parts in my life where it wouldn't have been that way, where if I saw it or heard it, I would have believed it, but I just never did.
I think,
but now the people I think
the people in the show are telling the truth for the moment. I mean, I don't think that there's a single time where I've been watching and thought, yeah, they're making this up.
Well, but that's such a slippery slope, because I've told a lot of truth in my life that were lies that I convinced myself were true.
Well,
especially so, with this kind of thing.
I don't mean that what they're saying really happened. What I mean is they think it really happened.
Yes, but what I'm saying is they may have worked themselves up into believing it after the fact.
I mean, I guess, but I get the feeling, I get the impression from watching all of these that, and there are some studies that point this out, and not just studies, but like just regular surveys and things, that belief in this kind of thing is fairly widespread in the United States. And these all take place in the United States. And that people, I think there is a, I don't know if it's like half or more than half or barely half. Maybe it's only a small number of people, but I think there's a significant number of people who are not very critical about these types of events, and who will take something that if you or I were there, we'd go, well, that's clearly just the house creaking, or the book fell off the shelf, it didn't fly across the room.
Infrasound's a great one.
Sure, that there's all these things that these people are very, and especially, you know, The idea is that if there's more than one person is there witnessing it, it's more reliable. And that's actually not really the case. I mean, if you can get two people working each other up about a book flew across the room instead of just falling off the shelf, that's even more powerful than if you're there by yourself and make that stuff up.
Because it becomes a feedback loop.
Right. And that's building the false memory as it's happening. Forget about how memories are always augmented and changed over time. And so a lot of people, there's a significant number of people who are really credulous about these things, and they call these paranormal people really scared. And these paranormal people show up with their psychics who really do think I felt a spirit in here and this, that, and the other thing. And also they use the same language when describing what the experience is like and what it feels like when it's gone. They use the word heavy a lot. When they feel like a house cleansing has worked, they'll say, well, it felt like it was lighter and there was more light in the room.
I could absolutely make a great psychic at this point. I've watched enough movies and things. I know I could make a good ghost hunter. I know all about ghost hunting technology, at least the way movies do it.
I read an article recently because sometimes they'll talk about the technology these people show up with. And one of them is the EMF, right? The electromagnetic frequency.
Yeah, yeah.
And I read an article recently that said the ones they sell to ghost hunters are purposely poorly calibrated.
Nice!
Because the ghost hunters, if a ghost hunter buys an EMF meter that never goes off, they'll think it's broken. So you can't sell them the really good ones that are probably only going to go off when there's something to detect. You're going to sell the ghost people some kind of crappy ones that'll sometimes give you false positives because the ghost hunters won't like it otherwise. That's what this article said. I don't know
it seemed pretty like the people writing it were credible and knew what they were talking about, but
so here's the problem I have, because as we've known, this entire episode is about me and my suffering. As an atheist, which I wasn't always, in fact, when you first knew me, I wasn't.
When you first started the podcast, you weren't.
Yeah. But I very much am now, to the point that I don't believe in any of this. I do not believe in the supernatural. I do not believe in God or gods or anything like that at all. Quite strongly. People in my life have spiritual and religious faith. And while I do not believe any of it to be real, I see the impact that faith has on their lives. Sometimes it's real bad. Sometimes terrible things happen in the name of faith and religion. But I tend not to hang out with those people. The people I do hang out with, it brings them a lot of good. It gives them a context on which to ponder the imponderables and to consider how they want to live their life and why they want to do it and what other people mean to them and how to be a good and functional person in the world. And I remember my faith doing that for me. And that's great. And that's why I like to think I'm not one of those shitty atheists. Because when it's not my podcast, or when I'm or not being asked directly, when people talk about their faith, I'm not like, yeah, you know, that's all made up, right? You know, that's bullshit, right? Just checking. I mean, clearly you don't, but I'm here to let you know. Like, I don't do that. I don't fight for atheist right. I think faith can be a wonderful thing. I had huge arguments with people the other day who wanted to condemn all religion. And I'm like, I know where you're coming from, but it is not a defining characteristic of religion that it is harmful in these ways. And I don't think that's okay. Faith can be a wonderful thing. I don't have it because I couldn't decide that. If I could decide that, I might, but I can't. I don't. Whatever. This is so hard to apply to my fucking house is haunted because I don't believe in it. And it helped nothing. Like, there is no benefit to the haunty, to the society around them, to anyone. And the same thing with ghost hunters. Like, I understand the appeal of wanting to check that shit out. But that's the thing. Ghost hunters don't ghost hunt to, like, learn their place in the world and find a better way to live and shit. They ghost hunt to try and prove to people that ghosts are real, even though we have established that there is no level of evidence that could prove undeniably to people that there is such a thing.
I mean, I think they would claim they're helping people. And if these shows are to be believed,
with these people are problem that I also don't believe is real.
Right, but if the people believe those problems are real, and then someone shows up, does a bunch of mumbo jumbo, and they feel better, and their lives are better, and they stay in their house, and their marriage stays, and their kid is not crazy anymore, I mean, that seems okay.
No, and that's potentially. I mean, there's lots of ways you can approach that. But, like, are you charging them? Are you there whipping them? I mean, the whoever the conjuring people are, fuck those people.
The Warrens, yeah.
Yeah, the Warrens. The Warrens ginned shit up so they could make more money off of it. I actually think they were believers, but they absolutely at least exaggerated shit in order to, like, it's awful. But there are people like that. But I'm like, how about instead of that, we just go to the people's houses and smack them around the face and say, stop it! It's not real! Fuckers!
Well, I don't know. Maybe my approach to it is odd, like, as usual. I mean, I do believe in God, but I think that a universe that allows a whole bunch of paranormal and supernatural stuff in it is a pretty sloppy way for God to slap it all together. So my faith in God makes me not believe in these things.
And I don't want to look too much of an asshole. I do believe there are plenty of things we cannot explain at this
point. Yeah. Sure.
But that's also not the same as there's a cohesive whole where it's ghosts.
Right. So I tend not to believe these things. That said, I also know that, like you were just saying, I don't know everything. And I'm very open to someone's story, to hear what they have to say and to prove that I'm wrong about something. I don't have a problem with that at all. But, you know, I think what a lot of people watching this show has shown me just how when people talk about paranormal things, they often feel like whatever they're saying paranormal thing happened, it's only threatening a little piece of science that everyone's just so jealous to protect. When the truth is, it's threatening the whole of the scientific endeavor. Yes. I mean, there's almost no scientific. Yeah.
It's very much like a flat earth thing.
Yeah.
It's like you almost have to deliberately keep yourself ignorant in order to believe.
Yeah.
It's not faith in the same way as like religious faith.
You're not just threatening this little part of science that some PhD somewhere is jealous to protect. You're threatening all of science. The science that makes your equipment work, for gosh sakes, is completely overturned by what you're saying. So if you have a claim, it's an extraordinary claim, and that means it requires extraordinary evidence, which has never come forth to my satisfaction.
Yeah.
But I'm totally willing to hear, and I'm not going to deny what a person has experienced. You experienced that? Great. I believe you. Let me put it another way. If I experienced something like this and I was certain the supernatural existed, I wouldn't expect someone else to just believe it without evidence. Why should I expect them to believe it just based on my say so?
It's a variation of conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
What it is.
Surely you should.
I can perceive it. I'm in the know. Like the fact that ghosts exist and I know and believe in that means I'm one of the smart ones because I believe in it when everybody else doesn't.
It's also implied, like, are you saying I'm a liar? No, I'm just saying that, a claim like that requires evidence. Or are you saying I'm crazy? No. And this is something that comes up in the show a lot. This dichotomous view of, well, either you're crazy. Saying
you're really stupid.
This dichotomous thinking of either you're crazy, like really, like diagnosably insane, or you're perfectly sane. Well, you know what? There's a totally normal person can have a brief psychotic episode. I mean, that can happen. Yeah. You don't have to. But there's a lot of extremist and dichotomous thinking. There's a lot of magical thinking. There's a lot of fallacies. There's just a lot of mistakes in reasoning, thought, and science that says, I'm sorry, you're not meeting the standards here to make this make
if sense. Your goal really is to prove the supernatural, why aren't you doing it that way? If you really think the world is flat and it matters, why the fuck don't you go educate yourself on the subject matter and then approach it? Why is it nobody with a PhD in physics ever claims there's a flat earth?
Well, I mean, I it does make me wonder, because I had no idea that there were so many stories like this out here. And if some of them are fake, that's fine, but probably only a small percentage of them are. I think a lot of these people really believe, and and they're saying they're seeing things, or they're saying they're being picked up and thrown across, or they personally are being picked up and someone else was there and says the same thing. So what is going on? They think the easiest explanation is just what they're saying, but that's not the easiest explanation, because I said it overturns all of science. So there has to be an easier explanation even than that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, my thought is it's just all in their head and it's a shared delusion or whatever, because that is a thing that happens. But is that really an adequate explanation? I don't know.
People sometimes say, I've said things like this when I was younger and believed. So I had this supernatural experience. It was a scary,
ghost with a hook hand. I don't fuck. It doesn't matter. But the ghost with the hook hand showed up, and it was very terrifying. And it made me realize I should go into nursing. And that my skills lie in helping people with hook hands. And I have become at the forefront of helping people with hook hands to lead better, more normal lives. That's awesome. But that's not how these stories go most of the time. Most of the time they go, and we had some people in here and the needles moved a little bit. And then we burnt some sage and now everything's fine. And to that story, I'm like, I'm angry at you for the oxygen you used up to tell me it. And I'm angry for the oxygen everyone involved used to do that. You took something totally fake, made it a crisis for an arbitrary amount of time, and then stopped and everything went back to normal.
Yeah, that seems like
don't do that.
But another thing is, it's interesting to me, is the narratives are often
pretty much the whole premise of our podcast. So maybe I should be throwing stones.
The narratives often aren't internally consistent, right? Like,
shocking.
This, wait a minute. The thing, the lore you're kind of building around this event and this entity, well, then why didn't this happen, or why did this happen? That doesn't fit your story at all. And that doesn't seem to occur to them that none of this makes logical sort of narrative sense, which if it's real, why wouldn't it at least conform to that constraint, right? If it doesn't conform to the constraints of science or whatever, at least
internal consistency.
You'd think so, right? You'd think that that would be some level of critique that you could reasonably deliver that everybody would agree is reasonable.
As we talked last week / an hour and a half ago, I saw a movie, My Best Friend's Exorcism, and it was very bad. I'm going to spoil some of it now. Don't worry. Nobody should see it, so it's fine. But what ends up happening for the exorcism is there's this background trio of brothers called the Lemon Brothers, and they are a Christian fitness ministry who goes around basically proselytizing while fucking lifting weights and stuff. And they in particular go to the school where all of our characters hang out and have a show. And one of them looks at our possessed girl weird. And so later, when our protagonist is trying to figure out what to do, she happens to be at the mall and that's where they are. And so she finds that guy. And apparently that guy has the power of discernment. Mm. And he is the funniest thing about this movie by a long shot. Cause he's an absolute 80s dude, bro, who just knows all this stuff about exorcism. And so they end up kidnapping the victim and take her out to this cabin. They're doing all this stuff and he's starting off and he's like, you know, power of Christ compels you, throwing salt on her and stuff like this. And he's like, tell me your name, demon. Tell me your name. We know the demon's name because we, along with the protagonist, have seen it scratched in places and things. And its name is Andrus. So it's like, tell me your name, dude. Tell me your name. And then finally he's like, our protagonist is like, Andrus. His name is Andrus. And the guy's like, can you come with me for a second? And they go out in the other room. And he gives this big, long speech about, like, it's very important for establishing the connection here in this, that I forced the demon to tell me its name. It's giving into my will. It's bending it to my, it's very important in the process. When you just go ahead and just tell me, like, it really undercuts the whole And she's like, I'm sorry. Okay. You didn't know, but it's not.
That's good.
If we're going to make this work, we have to. And yeah, that whole section of the movie is like the only real funny part, but I did like that. And he got real excited when it was proved, and then he had to go out and protein load.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Bodybuilder.
When there's a demon involved, they often are looking, you know, we want to know the demon's name. And
well, because that's a classic thing. True names is always a thing in magic
things is if I know your true name, that is a little piece of you and gives me power over you. The power of names is common in a lot of occult and magical traditions.
But it's interesting that the people who come to bless a house or to do an exorcism, there's similarities, of course, but there's also some pretty dramatic differences between how different people do it. And it's like, I mean, so you're trying to argue that there's science. Well, you know why that is. Well,
it's because it's all made up.
Well, I know, but what I'm saying is, you know, there's this approach to the whole thing, like it's all scientific and they're proving things with equipment and everything, but
yeah,
but they have all these different ways of cleansing the house that, you know, don't seem tested or scientific or consistent or reliable or anything.
Back when I still had faith, somebody referred to, it might've come out of a Starhawk book, I don't remember, but at one point somebody referred to spirituality and religion as a paradigm that helps an individual human mind grasp an unknowable universe. Essentially a symbolic tool that helps our mind deal with concepts that are frankly beyond the capacity of our mind. And I like that idea. But again, you're still in your mind. And you still, I mean, it's not, the supernatural is not the fucking secret. It's not if you believe hard enough. Like, contrary to my personal possession, it's not if you believe hard enough it comes true. This is, oh my God, I'm using this so much lately. And we've talked about this already. This is a similar thing. Ask a ghost hunter, like a real committed one, if it could be proven to you that there's absolutely no such thing as ghosts, would you want to know that? And I think a lot of them would not answer yes. And I think a lot of the ones that would answer yes would be deluding themselves. But I think the opposite is true as well. Ask a real digging in their heels skeptic, if it could be proven to you that the supernatural was real, would you want to know that? And a lot of them would probably say no. I think I'm in the yes camp. I just don't know that I think it'd be possible. But if that was a thing, I think I would want to know.
I mean, I think, like, if someone said, well, if someone could prove that God didn't exist, would you want them to? And I know the answer is yes, because people have approached me or written books that claim to do so. And I want to hear what they have to say. And I read what they have to say. So, of course, they didn't do that. They didn't
really
do what they didn't do what they claimed. Huh. Well, and of course, everybody,
I
mean, who's
I guess I probably would have heard about it if they had.
Everyone who's claimed to have proof that God does exist has also failed at that. I've listened to those people too, and they also do not know what they're talking about. As far as I can tell, it's unprovable. And everyone who claims otherwise, I've listened to them and they've completely failed.
Well, it's definitively unprovable either way, because I say definitively very carefully. If I think the definitions of God have baked in aspects of it that would not allow it to be proven or disproven.
I suppose. I mean, there are clever, very clever arguments, believe me. I mean, I'm not saying that the argument they put forth was like stupid sixth grade or something. It was very sophisticated, but it fell far short of their goal of proving anything or disproving anything. But I was grateful to see, I mean, for example, Paul Davies, who wasn't trying to prove or disprove God, he was just trying to question the way people think about God, talked about how everyone's conception of God in the modern world anyway is very like he or she is beyond time. But all of our concepts of personality are time bound. I mean, so how can God have a personality and be beyond time? I thought that was a very interesting question, very clever. Of course, you know, it's God. So a lot of things might be possible that we can't even comprehend or imagine. But I thought that was an interesting question to pose to a faithful person and say, well, how do you think that works? So I like those types of discussions and conversations and everything else. But I mean, I'm perfectly happy to hear what anybody has to say. If they think, well, I have a way to disprove something you believe, I want to hear it. But, you know, it often.
I do too. But I think in my case, it's for amusement.
I'm open. I'm seriously open. But it's easy to be open when you're pretty sure they're not going to come up with anything any good anyway.
One of the great classic episodes of The Simpsons, we find out that Homer has had a crayon lodged in his brain since he was a small child, and it's why he's so stupid. And so he has a surgery to remove it, and he becomes incredibly smart. In the process, he finds out that it is difficult to live in society when you're really smart, and eventually he hires Mo to shove a crayon back in there. And meanwhile, he and Lisa bonded a lot, and it's very crushing. Anyway, not the point. While he's smart, one morning he goes outside and he sees Ned Flanders and he says, "Hey, Ned, so I was working on a new proposal for a flat tax rate, and I accidentally proved there's no God. So I thought you'd like to know." And he hands a piece of paper to Ned, and Ned opens it up and says, "Well, let's just see here." Looks, it's like, but did you keep it? Oh yeah, no, he did. Yep, looks pretty airtight. And then Homer leaves, and I forget what the line is that Ned says there, but he burns the paper, like explicitly, so that no one else can ever find out. And then we just move on.
Interesting.
All right, we are so far over time. This is really cutting into my vacation. You should write us themagicaltalkinghead@gmail.com. Even though we didn't get to any today, we get to some sometimes, and we need more. I think we only got like two right now.
I think
send us more emails. Otherwise, you get more of this shit. Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that.
Go to aethertheater.com, look at all of William's stuff. Seriously, there's a lot of stuff there. You should go check it out. Go to smashwords.com and read my book, Odd Wings. With an upcoming sequel that is going to have a pull quote from Beth that says, "I'm 25% through. It's not bad. I may even read the sequel." Absolutely going on the back cover. Still excited about that. Listen again next week, because we'll keep doing it. So and keep William in your thoughts and prayers. He'll be out without me for a week, and I don't know how he's going to cope.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.